People across Iran take part in street demonstrations to condemn the Wednesday terrorist attack on a shrine. France is grappling with its highest inflation in nearly four decades, with people feeling the pinch of soaring food and energy prices. And South Korea says North Korea has fired two ballistic missiles into the Korean Peninsula waters 4 days after the two exchanged warning shots. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iranians have held nationwide rallies to condemn the Wednesday terrorist attack in the southern city of Shiraz. The protesters took to the streets in different cities following Friday prayers. They chanted slogans and held banners calling for the perpetrators to be brought to justice. At least 15 people, including two children, were killed after a gunman opened fire at pilgrims at the Shah Cheragh Holy Shrine in Shiraz. 26 others were also wounded. The Daesh terror group claimed responsibility. Iranian authorities have promised a firm response to the terror attack, saying that the perpetrators and their backers will be punished. Staying with Iran, the country's Revolution Guards Corps says that it has thwarted a terror attack in the city of Shiraz, where Daesh claimed the Wednesday deadly shooting. The IRGC says its intelligence unit detected and foiled a bombing which was planned to target congested streets in the southern city. The governor of Shiraz also says a terrorist who is now in police custody was seeking to explode a bomb in the crowded street on Thursday night. The city, located in Fars province, is mourning the death of 15 people killed in the shooting. And France is grappling with its highest inflation in nearly four decades, with people feeling the pinch of soaring food and energy prices. Consumer price index climbed by 6.2% in October in a year-on-year basis. That is according to a preliminary data published by France's Statistics Authority. Food prices have seen the highest increase, standing at around 12%. That means people making ends meet are affected mostly. Energy prices have skyrocketed as well, prompting measures by the government to help low-income households. Meanwhile, the Eurozone economy is reeling from inflation. The European Central Bank has announced another increase in interest rates to curb soaring prices, but there are fears that the tightening monetary policy would lead to a recession. Hard-pressed mortgage holders in the Eurozone receive more bad news as the European Central Bank raises interest rates by 75 basis points. The energy sanctions against Russia continue to backfire. Some economies warn that the EU is heading for a deep recession. North Korea has fired two ballistic missiles off its east coast in the latest in a series of launches in recent weeks. South Korea's military says the missiles were short range. It says that it has stepped up monitoring and security while coordinating with the U.S. The latest launch comes 4 days after Seoul and Pyongyang exchanged warning shots off the west coast. It also comes as South Korea is set to finish a 12-day military drill that includes exercises with the U.S. North Korea is strongly opposed to the joint drill, saying that they are a rehearsal for an invasion. Pyongyang says missile launches are a protest against the drills, while tensions are simmering on the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. and the South say the North is preparing to conduct a new nuclear test, the seventh since 2017. South Korean civil leaders demand an end to joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises. Two countries have engaged in the largest military drills in 5 years, with more exercises to continue in November. The drills come amid a rise in tensions following North Korea's recent missile tests. Frank Smith reports.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has been under pressure for his hardline policy against North Korea, as tensions increase amid renewed large-scale military exercises with the U.S. This week, he sought to reassure the National Assembly and the public.
We will strengthen deterrence against North Korea with overwhelming capabilities through combined defense posture between South Korea and the U.S. and the trilateral security cooperation between South Korea, the U.S., and Japan so that our people can continue their daily lives without worry.
Progressive civil society worries the Korean Peninsula has fallen into crisis with unification becoming more and more remote. They oppose the military exercises, demanding an end to the drills and a rethinking of South Korea's alliance with the United States.
From the 31st, the South Korean and U.S. forces will conduct the largest ever joint air war exercise in Korea, with 250 Air Force units deployed to strike hundreds of strategic bases in North Korea at the same time. The Korean Peninsula should not be an outpost for American hegemony in the world. This land should not be an American war base.
The U.S.-South Korea drills have continued since the end of August, following North Korea's testing of dozens of ballistic missiles. South Korea this week staged a large-scale amphibious landing drill. North Korea views such military exercises as a rehearsal for invasion. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has emphasized the need for the U.S. to show a strong commitment toward extended deterrence, the so-called nuclear umbrella. But that may not be enough, with stronger conservative voices here calling for South Korea to develop its own nuclear weapons. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Welcome to another edition of the News Review. In this edition, after more than a decade of on and off indirect talks, Lebanon and Israel have finally signed a U.S.-mediated deal to end their maritime dispute. The agreement will allow Lebanon to exploit its own natural resources. Our correspondent Mariam Sully has the details.
Lebanon and Israel have finalized a U.S.-brokered deal aimed at resolving a maritime dispute. President Michel Aoun signed a letter on Thursday endorsing the agreement. The final paperwork was submitted to the United Nations in Naqoura, southern Lebanon, concluding a long path of indirect negotiations with the Israeli regime. Separately, the Israeli cabinet, led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid, also approved the agreement. The regime's representative then delivered the signed copy to the UN at the Naqoura point. Hezbollah Secretary General stressed in a brief statement that the deal is a victory for Lebanon's government, people, and resistance. Nasrallah also declared the end of Hezbollah's exceptional mobilization over the maritime dispute, saying the resistance movement had accomplished its mission regarding the issue. Hezbollah leaders said the agreement is not an international treaty.
What happened in Naqoura is not normalization with Israel. This deal is not an international treaty and is not a recognition of Israel. Israel itself has admitted it received no security guarantees.
U.S. Envoy Amos Hochstein, who was with the Lebanese delegation in the southern Lebanese town of Naqoura, had met the top Lebanese officials.
I truly believe and hope that this can be an economic turning point in Lebanon for a new era of investment and continued support to lift up the economy and make sure that whatever arrangements happen, they're done openly, transparently, and making sure that the benefits are felt directly by all the Lebanese people.
Experts believe this agreement would put Lebanon on the map of natural gas exporters. President Michel Aoun stressed in a statement that demarcating the southern maritime border is a technical matter that has no political implications and won't change his country's policy towards the Israeli regime. U.S. President Joe Biden has hailed the maritime border deal as a historic breakthrough. For Lebanon, it unlocks the possibility to exploit its own natural resources at a time when the West is seeking gas suppliers and looking for alternatives to Russian gas. Mariam Saleh, Naqoura, South Lebanon.
To discuss that further, we're joined, of course, by our correspondent Mariam Saleh from Beirut, also Santos Al-Assad, journalist and human rights advocate, also joining us live from Beirut. Let's begin with our correspondent, Mariam. If you could please tell us more about the significance of this deal.
Well, Well, it's very significant in several terms. First of all, it is the first such agreement that Israel has ever signed without the other party having to be part of a normalization deal or any sort of recognition of the Israeli regime. So that on one hand gives Lebanon its rights, its full rights, actually, and this is something that Lebanon has been calling for quite a long time. The true legitimate line, if we may say the borderline, in the maritime, in the sea for Lebanon is Line 23. Now, Lebanon had been using higher levels of lines or other borders in order for it to be able to reach Line 23. The Americans and the Israelis had gone lower, much below that, and they wanted to strip Lebanon of some 860 square cubes, cubic meters. So that was something that Lebanon had refused from day one. And now with all of this negotiation, with the fact that the United States is in need of gas suppliers on one hand, and second of all, the fact that the Israelis do not want any sort of confrontation with the resistance in Lebanon because they understand the repercussions that could happen as a result of such a confrontation. So all of these factors, if you may say, and the fact that the Lebanese negotiators were quite intent, they were very much meticulous, they were very much careful that they had a good deal, that they wanted to achieve all of Lebanon's rights. They even went word for word in the agreement, making sure that Lebanon, first of all, would not be trapped in some sort or tricked into any sort of agreement that would lead to certain security guarantees for the Israeli regime on one hand, and would not strip Lebanon of any of its territory as well, because the Israelis had tried, even in the last 36 hours, tried to remove one of the areas, which is in the Ras Naqoura area, and that's a very significant strategic point for Lebanon that did not let go, so they decided to postpone that place only in order for Lebanon to get all of its rights, in addition to the full sovereignty over the Qana field, which goes beyond Line 23, and that is also very significant thing for Lebanon. It could be very beneficial and for the sake of the revenues. Now, when it comes also economically, this could open the door for Lebanon into things that has never happened in the past. Lebanon has a chance to be a petrol and gas exporter, and this is the first time in its history, and this is what something that is probably the only card that could salvage Lebanon from its economic crisis, although it might take a few years, it might take some time. Well, Lebanon could probably start seeing the impact of this with more investments into the country, with the fact that we will probably see the Israelis backing off when it comes to launching aggressions and so on against Lebanon. So that will entail the fact that Lebanon will be open to investments and would have the possibility of becoming economically even more progressive.
Mr. Al-Assad, well, our correspondent did elaborate on how this deal is significant. I would like to know that that's Ms. Al-Assad, I'm very sorry. I would like to know how you believe that this deal can be a game changer for Lebanon as far as the economy is concerned.
Yes, as you know that once again Lebanon, this tiny state in West Asia, has been able to defeat and to crush the American hegemony and the Zionist scene. That you know that for the last 2 years, the Lebanese have been suffering from a very critical financial crisis. But the resistance has been able to prove that only the option of resistance and the option of being steadfast and having this resilience on our natural rights is the option and is the only means of maintaining these rights and maintaining the Lebanese rights. Yes, now Lebanon would be able to buy its national resources, the oil at a time, a very critical time, as we know the global crisis that all the states around the globe are facing. So Lebanon is now able to invest in this natural resources and to be able to. To crush, as I have mentioned, the American schemes and the sanctions that have been imposed brutally on the Lebanese, and which aimed at starving them, the option of resistance and the option of the national unity that the Lebanese have shown, this unity between the resistance, the people, and the army, and between the resistance and the Lebanese diplomacy, have all shown their resilience, their steadfastness, and that they don't accept any pressures by the West, and also that they are not like what's going on in the Gulf regime, who are normalizing by the Zionist regime for nothing, only for maintaining their throne. But the Lebanese have refused to show any extent of this shameful normalization. They have claimed their rights by means of resistance.
Thank you very much, our correspondent, Maram Saleh, from Beirut. Also, Ms. Sandus Al-Assad, journalist and human rights advocate.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Eight-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
The International Monetary Fund's latest World Economic Outlook forecasts that Iran's economy will experience positive growth in 2022 for the third year in a row, in spite of tough sanctions imposed by the United States against Iran and the impact of the global coronavirus pandemic. The IMF also anticipated that Iran's inflation rate and balance of its current accounts will improve in the current year. The international body had put Iran's inflation rate in 2021 at 40.1%, adding that not only Iran's inflation rate will not increase in the current year as compared to a year earlier, but also it will hit 40% in general, showing a bit of improvement. Nonetheless, the state of Iran's economy is one of the main forces propelling Iranians into the streets these days, socio-political experts say. A sense of disillusionment over the failure of conservative administrations to improve the economy has been a factor in unifying the government's opponents and supporters inside the country. Ordinary citizens denounce the recent riots, street vandalism, and the illegal U.S. sanctions, but say that the majority of Iranians, regardless of their political views, are concerned about their livelihoods today and for their children's future. For an analysis of the state of the Islamic Republic's economy in resisting U.S. sanctions, stay with us on this edition of Iran Today. Decades of inhumane U.S.-led sanctions aimed at Iranian people and governments, along with the impact of a pandemic compounded by internal mismanagement and corruption, have hindered Iran's economy in terms of growth and progress. Some 655 Iranian entities and individuals were sanctioned under the administration of former U.S. President Barack Obama, according to the Center for New American Security. But the most brutal punishments kicked off in 2018 after Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew the U.S. from the Iran nuclear deal with world powers, and as a result, Iran's banks were cut off from the worldwide interbank financial telecommunication system.
Life under sanctions makes the country that is under it try to find alternative ways and use creativity. This happened, and the U.S. had the idea during the Obama era that the Secretary of State, Mrs. Clinton, said that we imposed paralyzing sanctions on Iran. Apparently, she was the one paralyzed, and the sanctions could not paralyze Iran. It has made it hard, it has made it difficult, but it never reached the level of paralyzing. And the growth of our economy and the growth of our production is the testimony. Of course, let me tell you that our last decade consisted of very little growth, growth of 0.4%. But during the last year, we saw a growth of 3.7%, and in the months that have passed so far this year, we saw a growth of 4.7%. This shows that Mr. Raisi's government was able to take important steps in the country's economic growth. Recently, the International Monetary Fund announced Iran's rank in the world economy at 21st place, and while it had been announced previously, we were downgraded to 28th place at one point. So this shows that Iran's economy has improved.
No sector of Iran's economy was spared by Washington's punitive measures, which forced the country into a two-year recession and continue to impact every aspect of day-to-day life of the Iranian people. Today, all of those sanctions are still enforced by the current administration of U.S. President Joe Biden.
Ultimately, the Trump administration targeted Iran's economy with more than 960 sanctions that continued endlessly as Iran's healthcare system was severely impacted under the most brutal waves of COVID-19 infections seen in West Asia. And despite appeals by world leaders to offer Tehran a temporary respite for humanitarian reasons. In the face of new sanctions, Iran's leaders remained defiant, introducing the doctrine of resistance economy that would make the country more self-sufficient and less reliant on imports and oil sales. The government invested in domestic industries, urging Iranians to buy local. It also continued to get around the sanctions by selling its oil to international buyers at a discounted rate.
In terms of international trade, in addition to the growth of non-oil exports, we also had growth in oil exports, which had several very specific reasons. We used policies that let us actually sell more oil and turn it into petroleum products, the same policy that was used in neutralizing sanctions. And with this act, we turned oil into products that cannot be embargoed. With this policy of having an overseas refinery, our main discussion was that we cannot sell oil now, so instead we should try to export technical engineering services related to refinery equipment. Since 2018, when we were subjected to heavy sanctions, the United States wanted to cripple us through the gasoline embargo, but our actions and their continuation in the last decade caused us to become self-sufficient in many refinery equipments, and we actually reached a place where we export technical engineering services today to countries like Venezuela, Uzbekistan, or Syria. This means that these countries have inactive or semi-active refineries, which we will first use our services to bring them to full capacity. And through this process, our oil is also sold.
Despite the unprecedented pressure imposed on a country in modern history, Iran is still considered as one of the world's largest economies. The International Monetary Fund, the IMF, in its latest report indicated Iran has the 21st largest economy in the world, announcing that in effect 171 countries in the world have a smaller economy than Iran in 2022.
One of Mr. Raisi's achievements is the relative stability of the exchange rate. When his government started working, the dollar price in the open market was 28,000 tomans. During the past year, this has reached 32 to 33,000. It means that the price has increased by 15 to 17%. This is while our inflation has been 40%. That means if we would have grown in line with inflation, the current rate would be much higher than this. This is a sign of relative stability because we cannot freeze the exchange rate by force. This point is very important. The exchange rate should be adjusted according to the needs of export and import with inflationary conditions. Of course, as long as inflation is controlled, we'll see more stability in the exchange rate.
Measures taken, consistent with the resistance economy doctrine, helped the country grow 4.7% in 2021, according to recent World Bank data. Furthermore, as stated in the latest IMF report, it is expected that Iran's GDP will reach $1,599 billion in the current year, based on the Purchasing Power Index, the rate of which will increase by $150 billion as compared to last year. Additionally, the IMF statistics indicated that Iran's economy is now twice as large as some of the Western European economies, such as Switzerland, Sweden, Austria, and Ireland.
In my opinion, what's happening in Iran's economy is this. When you say that the amount of tax revenues has increased by more than 60% compared to last year, when you say that our oil sales have increased 8 times, and when you say that our non-oil exports are going through a growing trend, this means that the source of government funding for current annual budget has changed.
Having proven more resilient and diversified than some predicted, Iran's economy started to return to growth last year, thanks to an easing of cross-border trade, COVID-19 restriction rollbacks, and a sharp rebound in oil prices. Iranian Statistics Agency figures published last month showed that the country's economy had expanded by 3.8% in the first quarter of the calendar year that started late March.
Another good event has taken place domestically at the Minister of Economy and the Iranian Tax Administration. You see, in the first 5 months of the last year, our total tax revenues were about 130 billion tomans. This figure reached 230,000 billion in the first 5 months of this year. It means that there has been a growth of more than 60%. This is while the taxes from production sector has also decreased by 5%. But it doesn't mean that there is an additional pressure on the production. These are general and positive measures that are happening in two Iranian ministries and their subsidiaries. A new approach in the field of foreign trade centered at the Trade Development Organization, and a new approach in the field of provincial taxes in the tax system. These changes show that there's a new trend in Iran.
Moving in the right direction last year, the personal income of Iranians rose more than 3 times faster than GDP per capita. According to the Statistical Center of Iran, incomes rose last year at rates significantly higher than inflation. Inflation for the year was 42%, but incomes and expenditures outpaced inflation by a significant margin, rising by about 53%. Furthermore, indicators such as the Human Development Index are high in Iran, and social services are acceptable compared to many countries of the same level. According to the United Nations Development Program, the Human Development Index in Iran is better than countries such as China, India, Brazil, South Africa, and Egypt.
These events are natural and happen in every country, but I feel that the reason why this issue continued, which is also related to the fact that the hand of foreign countries can be seen in the continuation of these riots and unrest. But even though people's livelihood may have improved in the last year, it has not been a tangible improvement that people can actually understand and feel and say a significant difference compared to the past can be seen in our lives. Certainly in terms of livelihood, it has not been seen. All right, that's accepted. But there have been positive events that I will share with you. In focusing too much on the JCPOA, the Iranian government put all its eggs in the JCPOA basket, causing it to neglect other capacities that exist. And when the United States withdrew from the JCPOA in 2018, it brought a big shock to Iran's economy.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Human Development Indicators, published annually by the United Nations Development Program, provide broad measures of well-being worldwide. There are three data dimensions: life expectancy, education, and purchasing power parity. The UNDP has recently issued its newest HDI report, which contains statistics related to 191 countries, including Iran. The 2022 report shows that the ranking of the Islamic Republic of Iran has improved to 76 in 2021. The COVID-19 pandemic affected the HDI globally in 2021, causing a decrease in the overall index.
One measure that Mr. Raisi's government has taken from the beginning is to increase the country's stock of basic goods very quickly to a reliable level. If this did not happen, when they eliminated the low dollar subsidized exchange rate and people rushed to the stores to buy the essential goods they needed, there would be lasting shortages. This did not happen, and this shows that the right planning was done, and it was done at the right time. As much as people shopped, the shelves were replenished, and this showed good planning by the government.
Meanwhile, a top UN human rights official said at the end of her visit to Iran that the harsh unilateral sanctions imposed by the US have had a damaging impact on human rights in Iran. Alina Dohan, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the negative impact of unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights, denounced the foreign sanctions that have affected the daily lives of ordinary people in Iran. "The sanctions have killed people, and there are several cases in my report," said Dohan. "The most convincing reason is the lack of access to medicine. Yes, Iran produces more than 90% of its medicines, but unfortunately, for doing so, they need to provide raw materials from abroad. This is difficult because we know that it is very difficult for this country to obtain, pay for, and receive these materials due to direct and indirect effects of sanctions. As a professor of international law, I can add that if there are no more sanctions from the United Nations Security Council, the international law will not allow governments to impose unilateral sanctions, especially on financial and banking systems." There is plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Iran sets 40% rise in exports. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi said on Saturday that Iran witnessed a rise of 40% in its exports in the past year and a 13% growth in non-oil exports this year, despite the ongoing U.S. sanctions. Raisi said that the Iranian nation, just as it excelled in the imposed war, will also win and excel in the sanctions war with the participation of economic actors and producers. "Experts and producers are our officers in the sanctions war, and they should strive to win the battle," the president said at a ceremony on National Day of Export, noting that no effort should be spared towards production and development of basic technologies. Gas exports rise up 19% in 5 months.
Iran's gas exports have increased by 19% in the first 5 months of the current Iranian year, compared with the same period of last year, managing director of the National Iranian Gas Company said. During the period, gas exports averaged 17 million cubic meters per day, while last year's figure was 59 million cubic meters per day. Majid Cheghini was also quoted as saying by the oil ministry's news agency, Shana. The official noted that gas exports to Iraq experienced 20% growth, and exports to Turkey also increased this year. Close to 30 million cubic meters of gas per day are sold to Iraq, and Turkey buys around a quarter of its 40 billion cubic meters of piped natural gas a year from Iran. In a speech to a group of businessmen and manufacturers a few months ago, leader of the Islamic Revolution Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the data of the past decade, especially those for economic growth, inflation, and foreign direct investments, are unsatisfactory. Accordingly, the administration of President Ibrahim Raisi has set a considerably more ambitious goal. He is targeting a growth rate of 8% for the current year. The principalist president aims to achieve that goal through boosting self-sufficiency and trade ties with regional neighbors, as well as China and Russia. But even with that approach, which includes parallel diplomatic efforts in Vienna to lift sanctions, challenges remain.
Mr. Raisi's government, especially regarding the subsidized currency and its removal, and the export bans applied to agricultural products, reconsidered the policies from the beginning of the year. Also in the budget discussions, they considered these points that the export bans at least takes 3 to 6 months to take effect. And during this period, the production sector must be able to adapt itself. Besides, it causes serious problems in the implementation of foreign policy. Another point hindering our trade has to do with the issue of import and export balance, which is very serious. It means that we have to import products in return for what we export. For instance, when we export energy, we must import other goods in return for it. That is, the trade balance should be close to zero, be it primary goods or end products. And in this way, economies become dependent on each other. For example, we constantly export oil to China and import products. And in this way, economies become dependent on each other. For example, we constantly export oil to China and import products in return, goods and machinery included. And this type of bilateral trade balance makes our exports very stable.
To reach President Raisi's envisioned growth, Iran needs major infrastructure investments, according to economists. Raisi's proposed budget for the next Iranian calendar year, beginning in late March 2023, which assumes sanctions remain in place, is forecasting a boost in oil income and a 60% increase in tax revenues. Still, Iran is expected to run a sizable budget deficit. Shortage of investment resources is the most critical factor. According to recent data, for the last 3 decades, gross fixed investment has been about 13% of GDP, which is insufficient to maintain the capital stock at its present level, let alone produce robust growth. This is down from over 30% in the 1990s and 25% as late as 2011. Oil exports are the main source of investment resources, but to keep oil and gas production up, the oil and gas sector alone needs investments close to a third of GDP.
You just check the amount of Iran's economic relations with the member countries of Shanghai or Eurasia, and the amount of exchanges may not be a big figure, but in terms of percentage, we see a significant increase. The amount of our exports to Armenia, Azerbaijan, and most of the neighboring countries, Oman, Qatar, and Pakistan, and the like, has grown significantly, which means that the priority of the 13th administration has shifted to the so-called non-aligned countries.
Nevertheless, the energy market is swinging in Iran's favor. Recent oil prices are at their highest level in more than 7 years, thanks to tight supplies and concerns over escalating tensions between Russia and the West over Ukraine.
It was almost 2 weeks ago that OPEC Plus approved the reduction of 2 million barrels of oil. In this situation, Europe is in dire need of energy, be it oil or gas. This clearly shows that the bloc that owns the oil has no fear of America. Also, the arguments that used to be related to the fear of buying oil from Iran do not exist now. Because the countries of the world definitely need to buy Iranian oil. And Europe definitely needs the oil and gas that exists in Iran. Also, in relation to our nuclear agreement, our expectations are beyond oil and gas, and we believe it should have an impact on people's daily lives.
On the other hand, critics of Mr. Raisi's government believe that warmer relations with China and Russia cannot, however, fully offset the impact of U.S. sanctions. According to some analysts in the energy sector, for now Iran can only depend on China for limited oil sales and on Russia mainly for potential development and investments in energy projects, although sanctions are likely to curb that potential. Moreover, trade with regional neighbors can continue to contribute to Iran's economic growth, but there are limits. For example, at times, trade can entail barter agreements that are limiting for Iranian firms. The critics emphasize that Iran needs the nuclear negotiations in the Austrian capital to be successful if it wishes to unlock its economic growth potential.
A significant issue in the government's actions is the issue of increasing exports. Mr. Raisi's government followed through with economic diplomacy with his neighbors. His trip to Russia, his trip to Iraq and to Oman, Qatar, Central Asian countries such as Turkmenistan and recently Uzbekistan, and reciprocally, the trip of presidents such as the Prime Minister of Iraq, the President of Russia, Turkey and so on, these trips were very extensive for the period of 1 year. And as a result, it has increased our economic relations with our neighbors and increased our exports. Last year, compared to the previous year, our exports to our neighbors increased by 40% and the income from exports also increased. One of the results of the economic diplomacy was that our oil exports went from 200 or 300,000 barrels a day to 1 million, and this effectively reduced the problems that the country was struggling with.
However, the principalists now in power were sharply critical of the 2015 nuclear deal negotiated by Rouhani because they believed that Iran approached the negotiations from a position of weakness before its economy had enough time to adjust to sanctions. In contrast, the Raisi team has tried to take its time in reaching a deal, in part to dispel the notion put out by Western media that it would negotiate when it is desperate enough.
The JCPOA negotiations did not stop in the 13th administration. Negotiations are being carried out, although no results have been achieved yet. But the negotiations did take place on the part of the Iranians. We said we'll negotiate, but the JCPOA negotiation was moved out of Iran's priority. This was an important point, that is, while negotiations were taking place, the connections with the neighboring countries were strengthened. You can see this in the figures and statistics.
Raisi's promise not to tie the fortunes of the people to the nuclear deal is emphasizing that Iran can survive if not do well under sanctions, and that it does not need to back down from its strategic aim of challenging U.S. hegemony in the region to have sanctions lifted. That's all for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do tune in again at the same time next week and each week after. And don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Bye for now.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Bridge. We are looking at supplication number 8 of As-Sahih As-Sajadiyya for Al-Imam Ali ibn Hussein Zain al-Abidin alayhi salamullah. We go to the part where the Imam says and asks Allah and seek refuge in him from mukhalafat al-huda, opposing guidance. We spoke about guidance in many episodes previously. Now, one thing I want to talk about, and we want to move on to the next part of the dua, is how do I know if I am guided or misguided? I mean, it's a fair question to ask, right? Now, there are a number of things I want to bring to your holy attention that you can look into yourself and see if these ones are with you. If they are, then inshallah you are on the right path and you are guided. First and foremost is when we find out that our hearts and our minds, they sink in a way where they just want to do the thing, the right thing by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. For example, when it comes to your passions and your desires, you control them. When it comes to your brain, you try to seek information and knowledge. Then obviously you can tell you are heading into the right direction. And because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given you the blessings to work that out. So this is number one. Two, when you find it in your heart and in your chest that when the remembrance of Allah is brought forward, the mention of Allah is brought forward, the mention of Tawheed brought forward, and you feel comfortable and at ease at it. For example, when you listen to a lecture, you'd be like happy to listen to it. Then you know you are on the right track. But sometimes when you listen to a lecture and then your mind just shuts down immediately, like, no, I can't be bothered, then obviously there's something wrong. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
A bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you're listening to the program Bridge. So we said that when a person finds it in his heart that he's comfortable and he's nice and he feels beautiful when he hears the words of Tawheed and monotheism and stuff, then he's on the right track. Allah says in the Quran beautifully, فَمَنْ يَرْدُ اللَّهُ أَنْ يَهْدِهِ يَشْرَحْ صَدْرَهُ الْإِسْلَامِ. Those whom Allah wants to guide, He will open and expand their chest to Islam. Meaning, they will take as much information as they can and they feel good about it. That's a sign of guidance. Also, when you find yourself trying to be obedient to Allah in terms of worship, in terms of doing good actions, and in terms of you trying to emphasize and try to encourage people to do the acts of worship to Allah, then obviously you're also on the right track. Because sometimes when you find it very hard to pray, when you find yourself very hard to even read Quran or try to do any sort of dhikr or even be around people who read the Quran, or you can't even be bothered going to the masjid, you can't be bothered doing any sort of act of worship, you fast, but you start to complain all day and night about fasting, then obviously there's a sign, God forbid, things are going in the wrong direction. The opposite, though, means you are going into the right direction. Again, when you find yourself doing plenty of supplication to Allah, plenty of dua, just like Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is doing in this dua where he says, "Oh Allah, I seek refuge in you from mukhalafat al-huda, that I seek refuge in you from opposing guidance." So the more dua you do to Allah, asking Allah for help, asking Allah for things, obviously you're also on the right track, because those who hate Allah, or at least not in the business of being very close with Allah, they're not the type that ask Allah. Maybe they will ask Him when they're in need, when they're in trouble. But normally speaking, they try to stay away from Allah as much as they can. Because dua itself, as we say, silahul mu'min, the weapon of the believer. And obviously, so the more dua you do, the better, and you know, you can tell that you're going to in the right direction. So these are just number of things that I and you can do in order to make sure that we are headed to the right direction. And also, you got to keep in mind, these things require action, require effort. You can't expect yourself to love something and to practice something without putting the effort into trying to do it in the first place. So it takes time, it takes time, it takes time, and effort and effort and effort until you get it right. So you have to keep in mind that it does not happen instantly. Rather, it takes time. We will continue right after the break, so stay with us.
You're listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. Now we were talking about Hidayah, guidance and misguidance. And the Imam alayhi salam, Imam Sajjad, was asking Allah, "Oh Allah, please, please, please do not make me reject guidance." Guidance comes in different forms and in different shapes. So we need to be guided. We need to be on the right track. We need to seek any means and any types of guidance. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sends guidance in different forms and different ways. We just have to accept it. A beautiful story that we have is a person by the name of Bishrul Hafi. Bishr al-Hafi was a person who lived in Baghdad, and he was known to have parties, wild parties in his house, and women dancing and musicians and what have you. And one day Imam Musa al-Kalam alayhi salam was passing by his house, and he heard all the drums and all the music going on. And one of the servants of Bishr, she was throwing the rubbish outside in the bin in front of the house. The Imam asked her, he said, "Is your master, is he a slave or a master?" And she says, "No, of course he's a master. He's not a slave. He's not an abd." He says, "Oh yeah, you're right. Truly, if he was a slave, he would have felt embarrassed from his own master." And that lady, she went back to her master and said to her, "What took you so long? Why are you late?" She said to him, "Look, a man came by and he said so and so." And he said, "Who said that?" She said, "Look, I don't know, a man passed by." And then this man, instantly, these words that if he was a servant, he would have been ashamed of his master, hit him so hard that he ran after the Imam, barefooted. That's why he got the name Bishrul Hafi, because he had no shoe or no sandals on. And he came to the Imam and he repented and he said, "Oh, thank you, Imam, this and that." And now Bishr is buried actually right next to Imam's Musa al-Kalam shrine. So one word meant to change a person. So Hidayah, guidance, comes in two different shapes and forms. So let us keep an open mind and open eye for it and not reject it. So we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to always make us not oppose Hidayah. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al-Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواه از کف دهن عشق و تولای تو را
Thank you. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio.
People across Iran take part in street demonstrations.